Well, good evening, everyone. And tonight will be an unusual service. We're going to say a few things ahead of a video that we're going to show. And the video will take about 16 minutes, and then I'll come back after it and say a few more things. So it kind of breaks up into two or three parts tonight. You've got the list of missionaries there, and we're not going to call the names again, but we were told there were 14 independent Baptist missionaries there in the Ukraine. We found 15, so we think we've got them all. We've got quite a pretty good foothold of fundamental independent Baptist missionaries in the Ukraine. But this is not all. We've got national pastors there because they've been there a long time. We've got a lot of Baptist churches. They're independent Baptist churches there in the Ukraine. And, you know, as independent Baptists, generally speaking, we've got a pretty good foothold in the Ukraine. It's not like I'm not trying to oversell it or say that everybody's saved. It's far from that. But it's not as cold as it is, let's say, in Western Europe. You heard the letter from Robert where they hated to leave the church in Russia because it was doing well. That part of the world is a little bit soft-hearted for the gospel. And even though they in Ukrainian seem sometimes, I've only been there once to Kyiv, but I've worked with them for many years, and I can tell you they seem tough on the outside, but they're soft on the inside. And God is doing a work there. And in the video, I'm going to just set this up beforehand and say, and then I'll come back, as I said, and say a few words afterward. The Russian Orthodox Church sees religion two ways: the Russian Orthodox Church and everybody else. And the everybody else they call Protestants. So in this video that you will see, when you hear the word Protestant, it might include the independent Baptist movement as well, or it might not. Now, you're going to see some Baptist churches there. By the way, you're going to see the Bethany Baptist Church of Donetsk, Ukraine, in this video. So you'll see some Baptist works, and we're quite visible there and quite evident. I just want to make this statement, though, just for people that are new and we're live streaming and so forth. Baptists are not Protestants. The Protestants were those that were within the Catholic Church, and they did not like some things going on in the Catholic Church, and so they left and got kicked out. But we were never there in the first place, because the Bible says that you're saved by faith and by grace and grace alone, and that baptism is not a part of salvation. And through the very beginning, from the time of the Lord when he started the church to the apostles, through the Baptists, we have held to that view because that's what the Bible says. And so, of course, the big distinction there is the infant baptism, and that's a problem that even some other groups had. That's the reason the Methodist and the Lutheran and others, they are Protestants. They got there, though, and saw some of those things, knew they were not right, and they also left. I just say that to say this. The Baptist that really stood up to that issue of infant baptism were greatly persecuted centuries ago by the Catholic Church, greatly persecuted, and they were pushed into the Ukraine a little bit. They were called Anabaptists at the time, and some of you Baptist historians know that term, Anabaptist. And Anabaptist really means twice baptized, even though many of them were only baptized after they were saved. However, when the Baptists would go win somebody to the Lord that, let's say, maybe they won them out of the Catholic Church, they were baptized as an infant, they got saved, and then they were baptized after salvation, knowing that that particular second baptism Well, knowing neither baptism saved them, and certainly we understand that baptism is not a part of salvation. We don't believe in works or anything else like that. But because some of them were baptized twice, they were called Anabaptists or twice Baptists. Now, I only say that to say that if you look up the history of Baptists in Ukraine, you will see a large contingent of our forefathers, really, and they were called Anabaptists. And the reason that we have, probably the reason we have such a good foothold there now is just the men and the families that have stood, just like our missionaries are doing right now, through great persecution and great trial. So that's a little bit about what's going on. Now, the video that we're going to see in just a second here was actually made before the current conflict. But it's an excellent example of what is going on now. This is a map of the Ukraine that we have, and everybody needs to be able, by the way, to see the screen. And you see, I mean, you all know this because all the maps are all over the TV, so everybody knows where everything is. But Russia here, Ukraine here. This part of the Ukraine that's kind of, you know, outlined in yellow, that is the Ukraine, but it's been under dispute for some time. It's never been covered hardly at all on any media, but it's been in dispute between the Russians and the Ukrainians for some time. And this is an excellent example of what is going on right now. A news reporter discovered that when he went to this Donetsk region, it's called, this region that where there's fighting and war and dispute, he went to this Donetsk region, and he realized that there's sort of two things going on. The Russians are there trying to take territory, but one thing they're doing is sending armed men into the Baptist churches, for example, and other Bible churches as well, sending them in and running everybody out and taking over the building. But they don't do that in the Orthodox Church. And so what's happening is, in this region where the Russian troops are taking over, is all of the work that's been done, by the Baptists over the years. I mean, that you could say, humanly speaking, is being, you know, destroyed. Now, that's not the case, really, because the church is the people.
That's right.
And we're going to talk about that a little bit as we go. But nevertheless, that is what's happening. And so even Putin, as today, as he sort of thinks that he's in a war to take territory, what did Paul say? Paul said, we don't really wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers of the darkness and spiritual wickedness in high places. It's a spiritual warfare. And so while Putin is doing the work on the ground, it breaks our hearts to see it, and we're praying for those people and all of that, the real fight is the spiritual battle. It's very rare. It's never happened that I've been here either, Brother Preston. Very rare in a church service where we don't have expository Bible preaching from the pulpit. Extremely rare. I don't think it's hardly probably ever happened. Tonight's a special service because, in fact, we want to talk a little bit about that spiritual warfare, and it is very important that we get involved as spiritual warriors. And so that's why we're dedicating the entire service to the topic. Our missionaries are there on the front line, and the churches, the independent Baptist churches are there. Believers are there. Baptist believers, just like you and I are there. They're there on the front line in the physical, way, and they're filling sandbags and doing all kinds of things. But really, it's a spiritual battle. It's very important that you take that list, and if you didn't get one, grab one on the way out. There's plenty. And pray for those missionaries every day. And pray also for the national pastors that are there and for the Baptist churches that are there and the people that are there every day. It is very, very important. Our call is to be a part, you see, of that spiritual battle. Let me say just another word about the, just to give some identifiers on the, so you'll understand the video a little bit. I've seen it several times, so I'm familiar with it, but the first time through, you know, it happens pretty fast. When you see DPR, or the Donetsk People's Republic, that's the Russians. That's the invaders into this area. And what you're going to see on this video is happening now throughout Ukraine. So it's going to be, when they say Orthodox, they're referring to the Russian Orthodox Church. When they say Protestant, it in their mind also includes the Baptist churches, although Baptists will be mentioned. In the first church, so this reporter, the video is about a reporter that goes around to try to understand this thing and to dig it out and find out what's happening. And he goes to the first church where they're still meeting, a few of them, mostly they've been scattered, but a few of them meeting. And he's speaking to the pastor on a pew. There is a lady up there, I think, teaching or something, but the pastor's back there, and he's going to speak to that pastor. And that, everything, because they speak a lot of Russian in this part of the country, that's going to be in Russian. And most of this is going to have English subtitles, but they're large enough, I think you can see it. But if you can't find that, you can't see it, feel free to move. You're going to know when he gets to the first church if you can see good enough to read. If you can't read it, it's going to be a little bit hard to follow what's going on. He goes to the second church, a national pastor's there, and he speaks to him, and the pastor says, we had 100 people, and they ran us all out, came with guns and everything, ran us all out. Now we're meeting and separated into three different homes, and we're still meeting. And the reporter said, aren't you worried? And I wrote this down, and I hope you catch it during the video, but I wrote this down in case you don't, because it's very important. The pastor said, we're not afraid because the first Christians were also persecuted. Then he said, they were not afraid. He's speaking of the first Christians. They were not afraid to preach Jesus Christ. Yeah, it's a good testimony. I mean, you'll be thrilled to hear that. They went to another church, and the guy wouldn't let them in. His military guy, they went to a church where the military did let them in, and he talked to the guy about the Baptist. And he said, yeah, the Baptists don't need to come back. They're just American propaganda. That's what the soldier said. They're just American propaganda, just a schematic, a schism, he was saying, trying to say, just a splinter, you know, just like that. But he went and he talked to a lady that was a member of the Orthodox Church. And, you know, I'm not trying to be critical of anybody, or, you know, but she just said, look, I'm not a big fanatic. I'm not a big fan. I don't run to church every Sunday. And you know, the Orthodox, again, I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just trying to say they believe in a works-based salvation. And you know, that doesn't draw people. That doesn't, you know, that's the kind of testimony you're going to get from a works-based salvation is, yeah, I'm a member there, but I'm not really a big fan, you know. And so you'll see that as well. This reporter's pretty good. He goes to the head Russian in the region, and he says, look, here's what's happening. All of the Baptist churches and the Protestant churches are being decimated and occupied by your soldiers, and yet you're leaving the Russian Orthodox churches alone. What's going on? Of course, the guy basically denies it and says, no, that shouldn't be happening. But you watch it. Just watch what he says and read it, and you'll see that he knows exactly what's going on. He also went to the Orthodox Church, and they didn't really want to talk to him, but finally one guy did, and he said, you know, why don't you speak up to the Russians and just say, look, it's really not fair that you're closing all the other church, trying to close all the other churches, and you're leaving these open. And of course, they denied knowing a lot, and they said there's rumors, but we don't know if any of this is true. I'm going to just stop right there, and I'm going to show you the video. It's 16 minutes, so just settle in and watch it. After it's done, then I'm going to try to put a few more things together, because there's actually about three or four things that are happening that we need to be aware of that have to do with the spiritual battle in Ukraine.
Они представились, откуда они, кто они, зачем они пришли?
Ну, мы знали, кто они. Это вооруженные люди Донецкой Народной Республики. Прямо потом сказали, что мы только за православную церковь, а ваши протестантские церкви у нас не должны быть.
Ну, лично я бы не дал бы. Потому что я в руки брал оружие для того, чтобы у нас было православное государство.
Over the last year of fighting in Ukraine, religious institutions haven't been immune to the violence. And this Russian Orthodox Church here near the airport in Donetsk was hit by some of the same Ukrainian artillery that came down and destroyed other buildings in this neighborhood. But there's another story about religion being targeted, which is deeper than just the holes in the walls of the buildings.
We traveled to Mariupol on the Ukrainian side of the front line to meet a group of Christians no longer welcome in Donetsk.
Нас поселилось около 60 человек переселенцев. Мы организовались в группу переселенцев и вот до настоящего времени живем. Здесь нас поддерживала и церковь, соцслужбы поддерживают, конечно, местные власти. В августе месяце в Донецк я приехал, мы приехали проводить служение. У нас было арендное помещение в центре города. И к нам подъехали 30 человека на джипе с автоматами. Ну, и они представились, кто они. И сделали у порога этого здания как бы допрос. Коснулись мы нашего учения. Они противились. То есть, говорят, вы неправильно учите. Я говорю, мы учим хорошим вещам, проповедуем о любви друг к другу. Что вы собираете деньги, забираете у людей деньги. У вас есть десятины. Я сказал, что это форма нашего служения. Это лично церковное, и люди добровольно дают. Ну, вышли, и тогда сказал, если вы еще будете собираться, мы вас расстреляем. Но группы ДНР выбирали здание, да, выбирали для того, чтобы поселить своих солдат.
Есть какое-то плановое закрытие неправославных церквей на территории ДНР и ЛНР?
Возможно, да, у кого-то есть цель. Такая, чтобы протестантские движения закрыть, это не только сегодня. Ну, нас считают как секту. Мы не являемся сектой, просто проповедуем Евангелие, Библию.
А в Донецке люди сейчас собираются в частных квартирах, в частных домах. Это секретные собрания?
Больше секретные. Да, больше секретные, да, да, да. Ну, потому что грозят. А некоторые пострадали.
Back in Donetsk, an elder of one of the Protestant churches agreed to show me what it's like for believers who haven't left areas under separatist control.
В связи с тем, что у нас забрано здание, мы не можем проводить воскресное богослужение в этом здании. Мы разбили общину на 3 домашние церкви. С вооруженными людьми спорить трудно, но мы не собирались спорить. Как в Библии написано, не отвечайте злом на зло. Мы освободили здание и ушли оттуда.
А они представились, откуда они, кто они, зачем они пришли?
Ну, мы знали, кто они. Это вооруженные люди Донецкой Народной Республики. Прямо потом сказали, что мы только за православную церковь, а ваши протестантские церкви у нас не должны быть. Поэтому в нашем районе заняты здания также и Баптистской церкви, и свидетелей Иеговы заняты здания. Только православные церкви функционируют. Богослужение до 100 человек. Конечно же, в квартирах мы не сможем всех разместить.
Вы не боитесь того, что узнают о том, что вы собираетесь на этих квартирах и будут преследовать вас здесь?
Нет, не боимся. Потому что первые христиане тоже подвергались преследованиям, и они не боялись проповедовать Иисуса Христа. Преследования по религиозным убеждениям. В советские времена это было преследование. Когда же Украина стала независима, притеснений никаких не было. Свободно было вероисповедание и множество церквей. В каждом районе города Донецка была община Церкви Христовой. Сейчас у нас осталось только три такие общины. 3-4 максимум.
A year ago, on a Sunday like this one, the Protestant, Evangelist, Baptist, whatever churches, they would have been filled up. Right now, they're filled with soldiers. And the only churches that are actually operating are the Russian Orthodox ones. The people who used to be in the Protestant churches are now in apartments like this one. And in the 21st century, there's really no excuse for why one denomination of Christianity should have preferences over another, and these people shouldn't have access to their houses of worship.
Средств существования нам не платят пенсии. Спасибо, вот братья еще помогают. Ну, в общем, что можно сказать? И когда это закончится, еще не...
Помните, Иисус сказал на кресте: «Отче, прости, ибо не ведаю, что творят». И сейчас, в это воинственное время, когда убивают людей, мы должны не оружие в руки брать. Она хочет поселить в наши сердца ненависть, злобу. Мы же должны сохранить этот мир.
We're driving around the city looking for some of the occupied churches to see if we can get inside or at least speak to some of the soldiers who are living there. Apparently there are about 24 Protestant churches across the Donetsk People's Republic, areas controlled by the Lugansk People's Republic, that have been taken over by rebel forces.
This is the Church of Jesus Christ building that used to belong to the church group we just met at the apartment.
Здравствуйте.
У меня команда была от моего личного командира, что никого на территорию не пускать.
Вы поймите правильно, просто нельзя нам пускать, военная часть.
Ну, я понял. Ну ладно, ребята, извините, что побеспокоили.
So this is one of the churches here that's been taken over by the military police of the self-declared Donetsk People's Republic. Hopefully we can get somebody to show us around.
Ну что это за здание вообще?
Ну вот это здание было, как бы здесь находились баптистская секта.
А что с ними стало?
Я не знаю, когда началась война, как бы они пропали. Уехали, по всей видимости. Mm-hmm. Вера одна, она православная. Я православный человек, и она была не зря оставлена нашими предками нам. И баптисты — это раскольники. Ну то есть это американская пропаганда, которая наш народ, русский, славянский, ага, забивает им головы, и потом вот получается вот такое, что вы сейчас наблюдаете, война.
Ну, вы им дадите возвратиться?
Ну, лично я бы не дал бы. Ни баптистам, ни евангелистам, ни католикам, ни греко-католикам, никому. Ну, что я в руки брал оружие для того, чтобы у нас было православное государство.
This is one of the Baptist churches that's been taken over, and we've actually gotten permission from the militants to have a look inside. So we're going to go in and see how they're using it.
А это что за?
Ну здесь они прошло. Мы сюда даже не заходим. Ну тут кто заходит, это чисто вон побить по груши.
А, ну у вас это теперь идет как спортзал.
Физический уровень я могу поставить. Сейчас покажу, как у нас физический уровень. Давай один бросок покажем.
Лена, как ты делаешь?
Хватит. So this is the meetings hall, and they're using it as a gym here. They've got a punching bag over there and something for lifting weights, and they do some training.
Блин, больно. Опа. А здесь не так много людей живет?
Здесь большинство не больные. Здесь караульная служба и больные.
А вы можете пару слов сказать о том, как, какую роль для вас православие играет в вашей жизни?
Честно сказать, я не фанатик такой веры, что там, вот как многие бегают каждое воскресенье в церковь, да, там просят там очиститься там от грехов. У меня нет такого фанатизма сильно большого.
Понятно.
I want to know if it's the Donetsk People's Republic's official policy to sideline non-Orthodox churches and to be kicking the Protestants out of their buildings. So I'm going to see one of the self-declared republic's leader's deputies to find out what his position is.
Мы снимали то, что многие протестантские церкви Донецкого региона заняты ополченцами, и что верующие из них выгнаны. Это официальная политика республики?
Нет, ни в коем случае не официальная политика республики. Это гражданская война, поэтому огромное количество эмоций. Мы против этого. Мало того, мы сами озвучим эту проблему, потому что московский патриархат, который раньше занимал 2/3 Украины, фактически сейчас уничтожен.
Все-таки на территории Донецкой Народной Республики вы будете призывать к тому, чтобы военные покинули церкви?
Послушайте, и в Конституции, и в Декларации независимости мы гарантируем всем. Вы можете поехать в синагогу, в синагоге открыто, в синагоге бесплатная столовая, там люди туда ходят, питаются и так далее.
Но я не слышал жалоб по поводу евреев, я конкретно говорю по поводу протестантов, именно их церкви занимаются около 20.
Я вообще не понимаю, откуда у нас протестантов 20 церквей.
Ну, я лично своими глазами был в 3, которые заняты военными. Это только то, что я видел. А сами они заявляют о 20.
Послушайте, вопрос еще понятно, что, возможно, вопрос был в насильственном выселении, но, возможно, вопрос стоял в том, что протестанты, мягко говоря, по большей частью, не являются с нашими сторонниками, возможно, они просто покинули помещение, эти помещения заняты были как пустые.
Насколько важна православная церковь для Донецкой Народной Республики, для вас?
Очень важно. Идеологические построения, которые мы сегодня делаем, мы очень бы хотели вовлечение максимально православной церкви в какие-то сектора морали, сектора каких-то вещей, которые касаются семейных ценностей и прочее, если церковь будет иметь более прямое влияние, ну, то есть, скажем так, что государство, возможно, даже запустит церковь как часть государства в какие-то из отраслей. Православие – один из тех серьезных основ нашей государственности, но, тем не менее, мы не пытаемся ущемлять никого. Понятно, что гражданская война является очень серьезным испытанием для всех, но мы будем стараться привести в нормы, ближе к международным нормам, то, что вот вы озвучиваете.
There's no doubt that the Russian Orthodox Church is the biggest church in the Donetsk People's Republic and has the most members. But its primacy isn't just in the number of followers. It's also enshrined in the constitution of the self-declared republic. It actually states in the 9th article that the primary church and the ruling church of the DPR is the Russian Orthodox Church.
Of the whole Donetsk region, and I asked the Metropolitan, who's leading the service, if we could speak to him about the issues with the other churches, but he said he couldn't because he was afraid of what that would do for relations with his followers in the parts of the region that are controlled by Ukraine and the parts of the region that are controlled by the DPR. So instead he's given us Father Nikolai, who's a lower ranking priest, to speak with at the end of the service.
забирается ли ваше имущество, ваши храмы. Такие случаи есть?
Именно чтобы забиралось имущество, мне таких случаев неизвестно. Известны случаи, ну, приходили, что-то выясняли, спрашивали там, о подчинении, о роли нашей в целом, да, о нашем взгляде. Угу. Ну, пока что насилие не производилось никакого. Угу. Ни над храмами, ни над священниками, ни над верующими.
Потому что мы разговаривали с представителями протестантских разных конфессий, и они говорят, что около 20 церквей протестантского толка захвачены как бы представителями народных республик.
Мне лично такие случаи неизвестны.
А, то есть вы даже не знали о том, что сейчас военные находятся внутри протестантских церквей?
Ну, скажем так, есть понятие «знать по слухам» и «знать достоверно». Достоверно не знали.
Православная церковь не призывала власти ДНР вернуть имущество ваших братьев из других церквей в их руки?
Ну, если такой призыв может быть, он может быть от высшего, да, церковного, выше церковной власти.
It's hard to blame the Russian Orthodox Church for what's happened to the Protestants, but I find it hard to believe that the leadership here hasn't heard anything about what's happened to the Protestant churches, and I think it's really their role to speak up on behalf of their fellow Christians here.
So if you grab your Bible, and we're going to just look at one verse in just a second. There's four things happening there in the Ukraine as we speak, not just in the eastern part, but in all of Ukraine. First off is the things you're seeing on TV. Putin's trying to take the land. And everybody can see that. The world can see it. We can see it. We understand that. And again, we're very sad about that. And we are praying about that. But the second thing is what we just saw here. And that's the persecution of the churches, especially the Baptist churches. And we've had, as I said, quite a foothold, quite a lot of churches. And again, just to see everybody scattered like that and meeting in homes, and that's where we are. And that's what's going. It hasn't happened yet in all of Ukraine, but that's the idea. You can be sure that what's happening in the eastern part of the country, that's the plan for the whole thing. That is Satan's plan for the whole thing, is to have nothing left other than works-based churches. And so we must pray about that. But the third thing, there's two more things that I want to talk about just for a minute, and I know it's getting late, so I'll be quick. But Brother Preston mentioned just maybe a week or two ago when he was talking about a passage over in the book of Acts, and all of the believers were there together in Jerusalem. And all of a sudden, there was a great persecution in the church, and they scattered. And God used that how? He used that to scatter the gospel, didn't he? And so it's highly likely that the reason that, you know, God hadn't told me this, but just logically, that we had such a group of Baptists gathered up there that had been there all these years, and there's a lot of believers and a lot of people saved, and now 2 million people have left the country, and they're going into the surrounding countries around there. And guess what they're taking? The gospel, you see. And so as sad as it is, and it is sad, and we need to pray, as I said, that look, if the whole thing would stop tonight, it'd be fantastic. But if it doesn't stop tonight, believers are leaving the country and going into other countries adjacent, some not so adjacent. I've heard some that are going pretty far, and will take the gospel with them. And it could be, we don't know when the church age is going to end, but it very well could be that this could be the beginning of churches in places that we never could have gotten into otherwise, and that God knows that. So just be aware of that. Something the world will never understand, but you and I can understand that. Then there's one more thing that I want to talk about, and that's the Jews that are there in the Ukraine. If I was to ask you, where do most of the Jews live today, the answer to that question would be Israel. If I ask you, okay, what's the number two country after Israel where most of the Jews live today, you might say, and it would be the case, United States. And most of them live in New York, but they live around, most of them in New York in the United States. If I ask you, what's the number three country in the world, what would you say? Yeah, it's the Ukraine. Isn't that interesting? God has gathered up the Jews there as well. I mean, President Zelensky is a Jew. Did you know that? He's a Jew. And I want you to just see one verse in Ezekiel chapter 36. I could use many verses, but we'll just go with one for sake of time, which is, but if you're interested in this, read the verses before and after, and it'll put a little context to it. But Ezekiel 36, verse 24, this is a prophecy God gave to Ezekiel. Ezekiel was a captive at the time in the Babylonian captivity, so he's a captive. And Israel has been scattered, or is in the process of being scattered out of their land. And the prophecy is from God is this, for I will take you from among the heathen and gather you out of all countries and will bring you into your own land. So God gives him this prophecy. In the early verses, God said, look, I scattered you because of your sin. But one day, and you can read the context here, at the end times, I'm going to start gathering you back where you live in your own land. Now, at the time, and just after this was written, Israel loses their land. In about 606 BC, they lose their land. They do get to go back after 70 years, but they don't have any sovereignty. They're not reporting to the Babylonians, but they're reporting to the Medes and Persians. And then it's the Greeks, and then it's the Romans, and the Muslims, and down through the years, they never, except for a very short time in there, for over 2,500 years, they had no sovereignty, even in times when they lived there. It was in our lifetime, not mine, but some people in this room, in 1948, when Israel, in fact, got their land back. So this prophecy in chapter 36 and in chapter 37, when God does say you'll get your land back, those came true starting in 1948. And since that time, God has been bringing the Jews back home. It wasn't very many years ago. It was a few, but not too many years ago when there were more Jews in New York City than in Israel. Not just in America, but in New York City than in all of Israel. But that's not true any longer because God is calling them home. Especially in the last 2 years with the pandemic and the intense hatred of the Jews in New York. I mean, the number that has gone home have been amazing. What is happening right now in the Ukraine is the Jews are going home. There's hundreds of thousands of Jews in the Ukraine that have never left. And I heard a number that of the applications of immigration visas that the Ukrainian Jews have made to Israel just a few days ago. And the number is so high that I'm not going to say it because I think it's too high, but I'm looking for the official report. But there is a very large number of Jews that are moving back home. And this is a fulfillment, you see, of this prophecy. So one of the most relevant end time signs is Israel getting their land back. And certainly every Jew, by the time there will be the end of the church age, there will be the 70th week of Daniel, or let's call it some people call it the tribulation period. By the time of the end of that tribulation period, every Jew, essentially every Jew, will be back home. And so God is calling them. They don't all have to be back home by the time of the rapture, but God is certainly calling them back home. Let me just say one more thing, and I think it's important to say, and then I'll kind of try to wrap up. The world might say, listening to what I've just said, So you've got a God, this is the world, you've got a God who started a war, and a lot of people were slaughtered just so he could get his will about moving people around and so forth. What do you have to say about that? And let me tell you what we would say about that. And it's very clear in the book of Romans, our pastor is preaching on and teaching on, God gave man a free will. I mean, you came tonight of your own free will. Maybe not the children, but the adults came of their own free will. You have a free will. You could have stayed home, right? And you came tonight of your own free will. Putin is attacking and doing the things he's doing of his own free will. That's his decision. The world always wants to blame God for stuff that's bad. But let me tell you, when God created the world, it was perfect. Don't blame God for the bad stuff that's happening, you see. But we serve such a powerful and sovereign God. And sovereignty is not a word we use very much anymore, but what it means is this. Our God that we serve, He can accomplish His purpose that He said here, whether times are good or whether times are bad. And if mankind is down there doing something bad, you know what God can do? He can accomplish His purpose. If mankind is doing something good, you know what God can do? He can accomplish His purpose. God's purpose will be done, you see, because He's a sovereign God. He knows what He's doing. He knows how to do these things. And so He's sitting there saying, well, fine, Mr. Putin, if you want, I don't agree with what you're doing, but if you're going to do that, then I'm going to spread the gospel a little bit wider. Mr. Putin, if you're going to do that, I'm going to go ahead and get the Jews back home because that was my plan anyway. You see, that's the way God works, and that's the way He works in this world. And I just want to say one last thing before I turn it over back to Pastor. There's 48 chapters in the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel is one of my favorite books in all the Bible. I tell my class every now and then, I have 66 favorite books in the Bible, and Ezekiel's one of those. And chapter 40 through 48 is about the millennial temple and the millennial kingdom that God will set up in Jerusalem one day with Jesus ruling and reigning in that kingdom. So those chapters there, the last nine chapters, are about the time of the millennium. Chapters 36 and 37, that's the prophecy of the Jews, of restoring their land and bringing them back home. The only thing left, I'm speaking now in the view of Ezekiel, not necessarily the view of everything in Revelation, but in the view of Ezekiel, the only thing left is chapters 38 and 39. This portion of Ezekiel is sequential and chronological. Not all of it is, this portion is. Ezekiel 38 and 39 is a war about a madman from the north coming down on the Jews, just like the picture we have today. Now, Ezekiel 38 and 39, he's not going to stop at the Ukraine. Probably by then the Jews are going to be gone. He's going to go all the way upon down to Israel. And you can read about it. We don't really have time to cover it tonight, but just that's what that's about. That war could happen in our lifetime. It's not impossible that what we're seeing now is the foundation for that particular war. If it is, we're right on the edge, aren't we? And I just want to say this, because I've never set a date, not in my life. I would not be so bold to do it. The Lord may not rapture us for many years. We don't know. But I know this, it could be tonight. It could be, I don't know if it is, it could be many years or it could be tonight. I know as far as Ezekiel's prophecy goes, what we have is Ezekiel 38 and 39, that particular war where God will fight the battle and destroy 83 out of every 100 soldiers that come down upon Israel. I mean, it's an amazing thing. What God requires of us, since we don't know when He's coming, is we've got to be ready. We've got to be ready. We need to be working. We need to be busy. And we need to be ready. He said, watch. That's the reason we're talking about. That's the reason we take the time to do what we're doing tonight, so we can understand what's going on there, because one of our commandments is to watch. But another commandment we have is to be ready. The question I have for you is, are you ready? Are you ready?